Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, episode 6. Ethan and Weiss here with you once again. Before we get into everything, let's take care of some housekeeping. First, if you're listening to this, it's probably because you follow one of us on Twitter. So, if you're listening and you don't, go follow Weiss at NYG Daily on Twitter. Follow myself at EthanGSN on Twitter. And lastly, guys, we're on iTunes. This is amazing. And you should subscribe. And you should also leave us a 5-star rating. And you should leave us a funny comment, because next week we'll read the funniest 5-star rating and review on the podcast. There's some incentive for you. Get some airtime. Get us a chuckle. And help us climb the iTunes rankings. Also, with us today, big announcement. NYG Weekly's first guest. We have with us Dan Duggan, Giants beat writer for NJ Advanced Media. You can follow him on Twitter, at dduggan21. And you can check out his writing on nj.com/giants. Dan, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks. I didn't realize I was the first guest. Either that makes the bar really low or really high. We'll see how it goes, I guess.
Well, hopefully you can set it high. So let's get into everything. I'm happy. Weiss, I'm sure you're incredibly happy. A week one victory over the hated Dallas Cowboys. So let's start with three things that we liked and disliked about the game on Sunday. Weiss, I haven't let you get a word in yet, so I will let you start. Take it away.
Yeah, I thought we were going to let the guest go, but I guess I'll start it off. The likes. The number one thing I really liked taking away from that game was obviously the defensive line, specifically run blocking from left to right, you know, Vernon and then the two big mammoths in the middle with Hankins and Snacks. And JPP, they all played really, really well. And look, they're going up against the best offensive line in football. They didn't get any sacks, but they were able to generate pressure and get to Dak a little bit, and the big thing was stopping the run, and that's something that the Giants did really, really well on Sunday. You got to stay on the defensive side. You got to like the scheme. You got to like what they took Brent out of the game, how they stopped the run and basically told Dak, if you're going to beat us, you're going to beat us with Cole Beasley, Terrence Williams, and Jason Wynn. And although they almost did, it was kind of like that random break mentality. And third thing, was the play first, Eli Apple, Sterling Shepard, Brandon Thompson. They played really, really well. They didn't, at times, they didn't look like rookies out there, and the Giants are going to need those three to play real well if they're going to contend this year. Those are my three likes.
And Dan, take us away with some things you liked from the Giants game this past Sunday.
Yeah, I guess for my three likes, I'll start with just kind of the biggest storyline, at least, was Victor Cruz. I mean, obviously, it wasn't like he had a vintage Victor Cruz game, but I don't think anyone expected that. Obviously, coming through that big touchdown was huge, and I think even the catch he made that was deep over the middle was probably the biggest play he made, in the sense that, you know, that was kind of an explosive play. He got open, you know, made a big gain on that. So I think you saw a glimmer of, you know, the old Victor Cruz, and I think the biggest thing is that it's probably more to come. So, you know, if he's your third wide receiver, you know, you're in pretty good shape. It's a little different than having Preston Parker in that role. So I think Victor Cruz is probably number one. I think, you know, as Weiss was saying, that run defense definitely stood out. You know, all the hype about the changes this defense really showed up front. Big challenge against that Cowboys offensive line, and all the hype about Ezekiel Elliott. And they really were up to the task. Started in the middle with obviously Snacks. But I think people are really starting to learn that Olivier Vernon is more than just a pass rusher. He was really stout in the run game. And same goes for JPP. Obviously, they didn't have any sacks, but those guys were very active, making plays in the run game. As the game wore on, they got a little bit more pressure. Obviously, Vernon drew two holds. So, you know, a lot of ways that's as good as a sack. So I think, you know, a lot of promising signs up front. And I guess for my third, like, I just go with the secondary in general. Obviously, you know, they're going to get some gains, and Beasley and Witten had some success underneath. But anytime you hold Dez Bryant to one catch for 8 yards, that's obviously a great job by the secondary. And the guy, Janoris Jenkins, who really out of the big acquisitions looked the shakiest in training camp. He had some rough practices. So to see him really step up, and you know, not that he was on an island with Dez all day, but he drew the primary assignment. And again, you know, you hold Dez to one catch for 8 yards, you got to take your hat off. So some promising signs there in the secondary.
Agree. Weiss and I were actually talking about Janoris Jenkins pre-podcast, and agreed that matching him up against more physical receivers seems to be a better matchup, and putting DRC with the speedier guys, even though DRC also likes to get a little physical. Three things I liked. I'm going to copy you for the first one. Cruz looked way better than I thought. That catch over the middle was really impressive. And listen, I'm someone who lost Keenan Allen to a torn ACL in fantasy. Cruz is one of my waiver wire pickups this week. So obviously I'm very high on him. I liked what I saw. And especially with what we saw from Shepard, Cruz should get some looks moving on during the season. My second like was the run game, actually. You guys spoke about run defense. I'll talk about the run game on offense. Really, really liked it. No more running back by committee anymore. We have Rashad Jennings first and second down. Vereen on third down. We even saw Vereen get in there for a couple runs. He looked great. The offensive line, as much as I don't want to hype them up, Marshall Newhouse looked pretty good in the run game. Flowers, that's actually his strength. His liability is in pass protection. So we saw a lot of great runs to the left side. And my third like, I'm going to go with defensive scheming. I liked how Ben McAdoo approached this game. I liked that he stuck to his guns. He rushed for a lot. He was going to make Dak Prescott beat the Giants' defense. And we saw Dez, only one catch, 8 yards. And the two primary receivers were Witten and Beasley, who were check down guys, big tight end, small guy over the middle. And, it's good that even though they only rushed four, they were still able to contain what could be, especially with that offensive line and Zeke and Dez, a high-octane offense. So those are my three. Any comments there from anybody?
You pretty much nailed it.
All right, perfect. Let's go into dislikes. Dan, I'll let you go ahead and start with this one.
Yeah, this is sort of a hard category. It was sort of a strange game. I was talking about this earlier. I mean,
I had a hard time coming up with my answers to this one.
Yeah, I mean, I do studs and duds, and usually it's not that tough to shave it down, but to come up with four duds, it was kind of a stretch. I mean, it was just, like I said, it was a strange game in the sense that the Cowboys controlled the clock so long that there wasn't a lot of possessions, there wasn't a lot of glaring big plays, mistakes, anything like that. So it's almost tough to come up with three. I guess the three I put in print, Brad Wing, again, you're getting really picky when you're starting to really go after special teams, but, and obviously, D'Aussie had a bad snap on that last punt, but at the end of the day, you're out there, you have a job to do, and the ball's on the 37-yard line, you put it in the end zone, that's certainly coming up short. And he had two other touchbacks, not quite as egregious as that as far as the field position, but that's obviously something that needs to be better. One of them I think I put in print was Randy Bullock, and obviously that situation's been rectified just by the fact that he's no longer here, and, and Josh Brown is back, so not a real long-term concern, but obviously – and, you got one job, and if you miss an extra point, that was costly too, and obviously it didn't end up mattering at the end of the day, but it kind of changed the dynamic there, because if he makes the extra point, Cruz's touchdown puts him up by a point, they can go for two, have a three-point lead, just kind of changes the end of that game. I know no one really harped on that because it didn't end up mattering, but just something that, that could have been a bigger factor than it was. And for my third one, and again, this is really getting picky, but Sterling Shepard, he took the fault for the interception. Obviously, he had a great touchdown catch and overall had a pretty strong performance. But you can't have, a receiver kind of running the wrong route or kind of giving up on a route. I don't know exactly how to describe what he did on that play. It was just obviously the timing was off. And, Eli has to be able to rely on him. So you can make the great catch in the end zone. And that obviously counts a lot. But you can't have the flip side of just giving the ball away because you're kind of on the same page with the quarterback. But again, that's getting really picky. I mean, overall for a rookie, that was a pretty good debut.
Yep, totally agree. With him, it's kind of frustrating because, you're going into game one and fans are excited. You don't have Reuben Randall anymore. And he goes out, makes that great touchdown catch, and then he runs, overruns the curl and doesn't try to fight back. But, rookie growing pains. And, he showed enough where you're not going to worry too much moving forward. Weiss, let's see if this audio quality is a little better. I'll let you take it away with your three dislikes.
We'll do a quick steal from Verizon. Can you hear me now?
Hardly.
Man, you're killing me.
You sounded good pre-show.
What about now?
Slightly better. Is your Wi-Fi on?
Good?
Slightly better. We can edit this part out, so.
All right.
Yeah.
Yes, I don't know what's going on. Dislikes for me, like you guys said, it was kind of hard. It really was a weird game. I did have Randy Bullock missed extra point, but that was taken care of already. I didn't like the play call a little bit, specifically in that fourth quarter, early on, late third quarter, early fourth quarter. I thought that we kind of got a little too conservative. I really, really liked that drive. We got the first touchdown and just bang, bang, bang. Four plays, I think, 75 yards in like 90 seconds. I really feel like that. We kind of took the foot off the gas a little bit. So I thought the play calling got a little conservative, specifically in that third and early fourth quarter. And also the second thing, defensively, I know the defense played good, but if you're looking for one sort of negative, I thought Dallas converted a lot of third downs, specifically third and longs, you know, third and tens, third and sevens, third and twelves. So I think they converted one. So that was a little bit of a dislike for me. But other than that, I mean, it's hard to come away from with a dislike from this game.
Yeah. Like both of you kind of pointed out, there wasn't a lot of bad. Everything was pretty much either good or we haven't really seen enough. So mine, kind of nitpicky. Dislike number one, the offensive line hype. People are starting to say, oh, well, maybe the preseason was an anomaly and Marshall Newhouse and Eric Flowers are starting to put it together. I'm not buying it. The Cowboys' defensive line is trash, and, you know, they'll get bigger challenges moving forward. So I'm not buying into it just yet, especially Marshall Newhouse, or Marshall Outhouse, as I like to call him, who was Pro Football Focus's number one rated giant this past Sunday, which boggles my mind, honestly. I was a big Pro Football Focus guy last year, starting to come off it a little bit, but we'll see. Number two, I think something that Weiss just touched on, third down defense. But listen, that's what happens when you're only rushing four and you're going to make the, you know, a rookie beat you. So really, at the end of the day, I don't have any problem with it because I think we're going to see more aggressive looks from Spags moving forward. And my third, defending tight ends, because, you know, the Giants over the past few years have gotten killed by tight ends. Jason Witten had a big game, and, you know, you can say that was kind of an effect of the defense. And this is actually a question we have for later on. I forget who asked, but we'll get to it. Giants just not really good at defending the middle. Landon Collins has improved. Excited to see that. But when you have someone like Jordan Reed coming up week three, you start to get a little nervous and wondering who's going to be assigned that responsibility. So I'll leave number three as defending the tight ends. And that's it for likes, dislikes. Let's talk. This was, okay, number one of my dislikes. Let's talk offensive line a little bit. I just want general thoughts from you and you, Dan, and Weiss. Because like I pointed out, Cowboys defensive line, not very good. Missing two starting defensive ends. And people, I feel like, are starting to overhype them a little bit. Should we temper expectations?
Yeah, no, I think you put it in a pretty good perspective there that the Cowboys obviously don't have a great defensive front. And I know it's everyone falls in the trap of overreacting to 1 week, just like we probably overreacted a little bit to the preseason. But a lot of these guys are who they are. Like, I don't think it's reasonable to expect Marshall Newhouse to suddenly become a better player or John Jerry to suddenly become a better player. Like, obviously, you know, Flowers is a guy who I know from reading you on Twitter, you're not too high on the prospects. But, I mean, he's a guy you can at least reasonably expect, like, he could improve. He could make a leap.
Right.
But some of these other guys, they just had a good game against a bad defense. You know what I mean? Like, Marshall Newhouse isn't going to be the number one right tackle on Pro Football Focus in 16 weeks, I don't think. So, yeah, I mean, hey, you got to take it because you're gonna rip these guys when they play bad. So you got to give them the pat on the back when they play well. But you can't ignore that there's obviously some mitigating factors that kind of lined up favorably for them on Sunday.
I feel like every time I tweet something negative about Eric Flowers, he somehow manages to play even worse. So maybe I should just start doing the opposite. I'll Costanza my criticism, and I'll just start praising him relessly.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Weiss, what about you for the offensive line?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of put out a tweet, I think, the day before game day. I said, if the offensive line plays well, don't overreact. But if they play bad, overreact. And that was kind of like the mantra I lived by watching the game. They played well. I mean, you gotta give Newhouse credit. He did his job. Flowers did his job, although he had a couple of shaky plays. The big thing for me was I saw a lot of improvement in John Jerry's run blocking. I thought that was a big weakness for him last year. I thought he did a much better job today. I shared a couple of his clips on Twitter. So if you're looking for, I guess, not an overreaction, but a positive, John Jerry's run blocking was much better. But the competition will get tougher. I think this week against New Orleans, it's a much tougher competition than Dallas, although New Orleans still isn't amongst the best defensive lines the Giants will face. I think the big test for the Giant offensive line will be week 3 against Washington when they play Kerrigan and the second-year guy, Preston Smith, and that's something that you and I, Ethan, have talked about. I think we talked about it before before we started. So the offensive line, I expect it to play better and maintain, and so yeah, you can't really overreact that at all.
Yep, definitely. All right, next up, we have written down pass rush and run defense as well as Victor Cruz. I feel like we touched on both of those during our likes and dislikes. Weiss, you specifically requested Victor Cruz, so I will let you start and give us some of your thoughts on Victor Cruz and how he looked on Sunday.
Yeah, Victor Cruz was one of my likes, but I thought, you know, since we're kind of going to discuss him, I say I keep him off my likes. But I like what I saw of Victor Cruz. He played really well. I like that one play that you guys were talking about, that he cut the pass over the middle. If you watch the play from the beginning, the cuts were there, the speed was there up the line of scrimmage. So you gotta like that. You gotta feel happy for him. I mean, it's been a rough, you know, 700 days since the injury for him, and for him to come back, catch the game-winning touchdown pass in Dallas, it was a good moment for him. It was a good moment for the team, I think, as a whole. So I really, really, really was happy for Victor, and I just wanted to give him a shout out if he ever listens to this episode.
Well, we can only hope. I'll touch on Victor Cruz a little bit. Something that I feel like not a lot of people talk about, and you sort of brought it up when you brought up that he hadn't played in, you know, over 700 days, and obviously it's great that he's back. But previously, I think, and Dan, correct me if I'm wrong, Weiss, correct me if I'm wrong, he had only played one full game with Odell Beckham Jr., or was it not even that when he had torn his patellar tendon against the Eagles?
Yeah, I think that was six quarters. Hurt in the second or third quarter or whatever it was, and Odell had obviously missed the first four games. So, yeah, it was six quarters they had played together. So
right. So, it's, you know, it's great to see them together. But not only that, if you think back to last year and how good the offense was running only through Odell and having Reuben Randall on the opposite side of him, now you have, you know, a great rookie second-round pick, Sterling Shepard. You saw what he brings to the table this past weekend. And then you have Victor Cruz back. I mean, people were worried about the offense in the preseason. I told them, guys, listen, don't worry, because at the end of the day, nothing really got worse about the offense and, you know, McAdoo's being a little conservative. But to see those three out there together, and we're gonna talk about this in a little bit, they're going to wreak havoc on some defenses, specifically the Saints coming up this weekend. So let's look ahead to the Saints. I wanted to do an advantages, disadvantages section. I guess I'll start with this one. It's something that I feel like not that many people are talking about. I'm going to give the Giants' biggest advantage, aside from the fact that the Saints' secondary is a dumpster fire, the fact that the Giants are the home team. The Saints, especially Drew Brees and Brandon Cooks, when they're home and they're in the dome, they are lights out. They're on fire. I'm looking at the passing splits for last year's Saints team, home and away. Last season, they averaged almost 55 more passing yards per game home than away. And total, they had 23 passing touchdowns at home to only 9 on the road. So I give the Giants' biggest advantage the fact that they're at home. Not that that would be a huge advantage for them any other week, say against the Redskins or even the Eagles, but for the Saints to be coming to them, I think it gives the Giants an enormous advantage that not enough people are talking about.
Yeah, you hit it right on the head. I think it's a plus when you don't have to play in the dome as opposed to playing in New Jersey. But the big thing was the last time the Saints and the Giants played in MetLife Stadium, the Giants scored 52 points. I don't think that they'll score 52 points. I think they'll score a lot of points, and I think the big matchup will be, I wouldn't call it a disadvantage. I'll say the big test for the Giants will be their secondary versus the receivers and Drew Brees, because they're gonna, like you said, Ethan, before we got on the air, they're gonna spread it out. They're gonna have Willie Snead, Brandon Cooks, Michael Thomas. They're gonna have Cody Fleener. They're gonna have Cadet out of the backfield catching passes. So it's going to be a good test specifically for the two rookies, Darian Thompson and Eli Apple, because I think they're going to be on the field for some time, because unlike the Cowboys in week 1, the Saints are going to spread it out and they're going to throw the football. And coming off a game where Breeze threw 423 yards, albeit at home, that's going to be a big test for the Giants, and specifically those two guys that I'll be watching closely, Thompson and Eli Apple.
Right, and that's something we spoke about pregame. And Dan, I want to ask you specifically, I think the Giants are going to get Eli Apple involved heavily this coming Sunday against the Saints, specifically because the Saints have so many weapons on offense that we're going to see some four wide receiver sets. We're going to see Fleener coming out of the slot, and we're going to see Cooks, and we're going to see Snead, we're going to see Thomas. How involved do you see him being on Sunday?
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely going to be the case. I mean, he played, I think it was 56 out of 78 snaps in week one, and that was against a team that's a little more run-heavy. So, yeah, I think he might be on the field, you know, pretty much every snap when you really think about it. I don't think you're going to need to be in your base defense a ton on Sunday. And, I mean, he's been thrown right into the fire. I think that's one of the more kind of – maybe we didn't write about it enough because, I mean, you look back on it, there was so many questions about, you know, people questioned that draft pick, and then there was all the stuff, is he going to hold too much and be too grabby or whatnot. Seems like he's kind of, you know, put that, you know, on the back burner at least. Hasn't happened in a game. It didn't happen in the preseason. So, yeah, he's a guy who I think is going to be, you know, a huge part of this game plan this week because – you're going to need kind of all hands on deck in that secondary when you have, you know, Drew Brees and all the weapons you guys mentioned.
Right, absolutely. So you gave that perspective. I only gave my advantage for this weekend, which was home field advantage. Honestly, I couldn't really think of a huge disadvantage for this team because I don't really think we saw that much on Sunday against the Cowboys. Weiss, did you have anything listed? I think you gave your disadvantage. Do you have an advantage?
Yeah. Advantage, I know that the interior of the Saints' offensive line is a little shaky. So I think if the Giants will be able to take advantage of that, maybe they'll mix it around, put Vernon inside, put JPP inside, and try to get to Drew Brees through that that interior. So if you're looking for one advantage for the Giants, I think you're not going to be facing Dallas's offensive line. You're going to be facing a average offensive line with a shaky interior, and hopefully they can try to exert that and get to Breeze.
Absolutely. Dan, I'll let you go now.
Yeah, I guess you kind of left the layup for the guests, which I appreciate. I mean, you touched on the advantage they have against this Saints secondary. I mean, they're like basically literally, you know, signing cornerbacks off the street. Right. And, you know, we were talking about how many weapons the Giants have at receiver. That's just something that you would think would line up pretty well. I mean, I don't know who's going to guard Odell Beckham, and then obviously the trickle down, then who's going to cover Shepard and who's going to cover Cruz. So, I mean, I think things really line up well for the Giants in that respect. And obviously, Eli has shown he can put up a lot of points on this secondary, and it's even worse this year. So, I think that there's a big advantage for the Giants passing offense.
Absolutely. All right. We covered all those topics. Now let's get into some Twitter questions. Some are more long-winded. Some of them are just quick-fire. First one is from Mark. And this is honestly a question I have. How do the Giants want to use Darquois? Because we have Jennings as the first and second down back and Vereen as the third down back, and we got Dwayne Harris returning kicks. So, Dan, why don't you start? How are the Giants going to use Darquois?
I think what you saw on Sunday is what they want to use him as for right now. I mean, obviously, he's there in case Jennings gets injured, but it's, I think, you know, most Giants fans, from what I gather, are happy to see the running back committee gone. So as much as people want to see him get some carries, well, then that means you're getting a third guy involved, and I don't think that's what anyone really wants to see. So, yeah, I don't think he has a role in the offense right now. And then as far as special teams, I mean, he's out there. I think he played about 18 snaps on special teams. Obviously not as a returner because you have Harris. But, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the role he has right now. I mean, he's a guy who is going to be a contributor in, you know, in the core special teams units. And obviously has nice depth if anything does happen to Jennings. But I don't see his role expanding, you know, barring something happening to Jennings.
Absolutely. Weiss, anything on this?
No, I had the same thing written down. It's going to be special teams, unless an injury to Vereen or Jennings.
Perfect.
That's about it. And even if Vereen goes down, I think maybe as that pass-catching running back, I could be wrong, but I think maybe they favor Bobby Rainey a little bit more than Darkwood to come out and catch passes like that. But, yeah, Dan hit it right on the head.
All right, let's go to Michael Milano, who asks, do you think our D-line can get pressure on Drew Brees? I'll start with this one, I guess. Absolutely. I don't think we saw their even close to their full potential on Sunday against the Cowboys. We'll see more diverse pass rushing sets, more diverse looks. Weiss, you already mentioned throwing Vernon or JPP on the inside. May see some NASCAR, but I don't think it'll be an issue, especially against a line that is inferior to the Cowboys line.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're, from the inside is where their weakness is. And if, a way to stop Drew Brees is, you know, you get a couple holding penalties called on his offensive line, push him back more and more. It kind of messes up his rhythm. So they'll definitely be able to get pressure.
Dan?
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll be able to get pressure because it's obviously not as good as an O-line as they face this week. But the one thing is Brees gets rid of the ball, you know, as quick as anybody. So he's not going to just be a sitting duck back there, obviously. But, yeah, I would think that Vernon and JPP, some of those sacks they just missed on Sunday, they'll be able to finish this week. But I do think that, you know, the Saints, the way they throw the ball so much, I mean, Brees is able to get it out quick. So I don't know if it'll be, you know, they'll be living in the backfield, but I think they'll definitely get to him a bit more than they did in the opener.
Agree. All right, next one. Nick Becht, how do we solve the problem of not being able to cover over the middle of the field? I brought this up earlier. I think it could be a problem when they face more diverse offenses, especially ones with tight ends like Jordan Reed. My answer to this one, considering that they don't really have a great coverage linebacker on the roster, would probably just be the further development of Landon Collins, in my opinion. We see him playing really well up in the box, and they obviously have Nat Berhe and I'm already drawing a blank.
Darian Thompson.
That's it. Darian Thompson. Thank you for that. So they already have Darian Thompson and Nat Berhe back there to allow Collins to specialize in playing up in the box. So, you know, we have seen him cover in the slot, and I think he might be the go-to guy for covering tight ends. Anyone can jump in here on this one.
Yeah, I mean, you said it. You really can't stop it. I mean, it's kind of, if you're looking for one weakness, there's your weakness right there in the middle of the field. And I'll harp back to that Week 3 game. That Week 3 game is going to be a good test for them going up against Jordan Reed. But to stop it, I mean, you got Casillas who can help. He's definitely been improved. Again, Landon Collins, can he develop? And obviously Nat Berhe as well. But I think if you're looking for one weakness, it's covering the middle of the field, specifically those tight ends.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would say the answer to the question is probably get better players. easier said than done. And then, yeah, like you said, maybe Collins is a guy who can develop. But it's also just kind of part of the game now. I mean, there's a reason why Jordan Reed and Rob Gronkowski and Jason Witten, you know, they're so productive. It's hard to do. I mean, because that's the whole point. Those guys create mismatches. So, you know, a guy like Kelvin Shepard is not supposed to be able to stop those guys, and he kind of showed on Sunday that he can't. So I don't know if you want to go crazy, change your scheme around to take away 8-yard passes. You know what I mean? If they're able to keep it in front of them like they were on Sunday, I think that's a win. But of course, yeah, there's guys coming up, and you know, you keep mentioning Reed. I mean, he is going to be a problem. So yeah, unless they somehow you know, Landon Collins transforms into Ed Reed overnight, I think that'll be a tough matchup, and that's just kind of the way it is. And you just have to hope you win enough other matchups so it doesn't kill you.
Yeah, Ed Reed, I'll dream about that one. I brought up Landon Collins already, and this one's from Zach Jacobs. Can you talk about the idea that they use Landon Collins like Deion Buchanan? That's something I harped on a lot last season. I thought his place was going to be playing up in the box like a hybrid linebacker. Dan, I'll let you tackle this one first.
Yeah, no, I think that is something that they've kind of experimented with, and you might have seen it. I got to rewatch the game from like the coach's film, but watching it live, I think they did it even a little bit on Sunday, because there'd be times when they'd be in their sub packages and Leon Hall was playing behind Collins, and obviously, you know, Leon Hall is supposedly the slot corner, but right. I think his versatility allows them to move Collins up into the box. It was a look they showed in camp a little bit, and probably something you could see more of this week, because I think they are going to have, you know, 5 and 6 defensive backs on the field a lot. So it comes down to, we'd rather have Leon Hall, a guy with maybe better coverage skills deep, and you can move Collins up into the box at that point. So, yeah, I think that, you know, I don't think it's going to be his every down roll, but I think that is something you've seen a little bit, and I think you'll see more going forward.
Perfect. Weiss?
Yeah, you guys know that that's where he seems to be more comfortable. Blitzing will be a big thing for him. And I think we talked about one thing before we talked about a lot of things before we got on here, but the one thing we talked about was those corners blitzing, and I think that you know, I'm not going to say it's not working, but it hasn't been successful considering some of the angles Janoris Jenkins and DRC have taken. That one play that had that led to Dez's only catch of the game, DRC came on a blitz and had a clean shot at Prescott, but Prescott hit him with the move and was able to get it to Dez. But I think blitzing will be a big thing for Landon Collins, being in the box, helping stop the run and getting to the quarterback. So that role where he'll excel at, and I hope that they keep him there.
Agree. All right, let's go to Dan Braun. How confident are you now with what you saw from the offensive line? Everyone looked improved. My short answer is I am not confident in the offensive line. we spoke about it earlier. Cowboys defensive line, not very good. I'm not going to get my hopes up. Weiss, I'll let you take this one.
I go back to that quote, don't overreact if they play well, but overreact if they didn't play well, and that's it. I mean, look, they did their job. You got to, like Dan said, you got to give them credit. Marshall Newhouse played well. John Jerry played well. Flowers was okay.
I don't think Flowers is going to ever come on the podcast. No, just a heads up.
Doubtful.
He was good. Like I'm more of a Flowers fan, if you want to call it, than Ethan. So, but there a lot of people like
that's not saying much.
Exactly. But no, I thought they played well. Look, they did their job. You know, they created holes for them to run the ball. But you can't overreact at that. I mean, the Dallas Cowboys defensive line was very depleted, and you know you can't overreact. I mean, they did their job. Kudos to them, and hopefully they'll do it next week. But I keep saying that big test for them is going to be Week 3 against Washington.
Yeah, I mean, listen, guys, Nat Burhey just unblocked me on Twitter. I don't even know why he blocked me to begin with. So I would say the chances of Eric Flowers ever being on the podcast are, like, in the negatives. Dan, you wanna take this one real quick?
Yeah, I mean, I guess as a guy who has to see these 330-pounders every day, I'll probably be a little less critical. But no, yeah, I think the one thing I'll go back to, though, and granted, I didn't watch, you know, every game last year. I was busy, you know, doing the Rutgers beat and all that, so I wasn't studying Giants games. And obviously, I've picked up enough of it just from hearing about it and reading about it and talking about it. But I don't feel like the offensive line really doomed this team last year. I mean, they were a top 10 offense last year. I mean, I know there were times where they couldn't run the 4-minute offense, and obviously Eli was under pressure probably more than you'd like. But I don't think the offensive line is going to be the thing that holds this team back. You know, I think it's not great, don't get me wrong, but I think it's good enough. You know what I mean? I think that they'll scheme around it. Like, they already kind of showed that in Week 1. There'll definitely be games when they go against good fronts where it'll be a bigger problem. You know, I don't think you'd ever want to see this offensive line what like Denver could do to it or something that. But
yikes.
I think you talk about the majority of, you know, NFL defensive lines. I think it's a mediocre offensive line. It's going to have bad games, it's going to have good games, but I don't think it'll doom this team because, like I said, it's the same guys as last year, and they were able to, you know, put up a ton of points and, you know, gain a ton of yards last year.
Yeah, I mean, off the top of my head, I think the Colts and the Lions have worse offensive lines than the Giants do. So, honestly, not too worried moving forward. You brought up the fact that they had basically the same unit last year, and they were a top 10 offense. So I think, you know, scheme is way more important than immediately upgrading right guard or left tackle. Speaking of the offensive line, let's do two more questions. This one's from
we're talking about this. Let me ask Dan a quick question.
All right, Dan,
we're fans first, right? And I kind of told Ethan this, but how much Newhouse played a good game? We'll say great.
Okay.
Question, but how much of that do you think was because Beedy is there? Because it's not a rumor. I mean, the Giants were hoping Bobby Hart would take that leap and win the starting job. He didn't. But now that Beedy's there, there's a guy that the Giants have on the bench. I mean, he wasn't active for the first game, but there's a guy the Giants have on the bench that they can replace Newhouse for. Do you think that there's motivation there for Newhouse to kind of say, no, I can play right tackle and I can be a competent right tackle? I mean, he played really well. So do you think that signing of Beedy impacted that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting point that I hadn't given a ton of thought to. I did speak to Newhouse last week, and I mean, he kind of, I wouldn't say he brushed off the Beedy signing, but he said, you know, they try out guys every Monday to take your job. So, like, this is no different. I mean, obviously, we know it is different because this is a guy who legitimately could just be plugged right into right tackle any day now. So yeah, you'd be crazy if you're Marshall Newhouse to not kind of see the writing on the wall, like, hey, I better, you know, pick it up. I don't know if that's going to make him, you know, a considerably better player. But yeah, it definitely doesn't hurt. I mean, that's what sports are all about. That's what, you know, every general manager, every coach is trying to foster competition. So if Marshall Newhouse was ever going to sit back after the 53-man cut and say, oh, I'm better than Bobby Hart, that's all I need to worry about to keep my job, well, hey, you know, here comes another guy who can take your job, like I said, any day. So it can't hurt. I don't think it's going to make a huge difference, but definitely, I mean, you know, it'll light a little fire. And I still think Beattie's a little ways away. I think he's more of an insurance policy. I mean, someone made a point, I think it was Tom Rock from Newsday. I mean, he basically has been out of football almost as long as Victor Cruz. I mean, he, you know, it's not like he got injured last season. He got injured last offseason. So it's been a long time. So I don't think the people who are expecting him to, you know, throw on the pads, go out there for one practice, and then potentially start on Sunday, that was never realistic. And it, obviously, if Newhouse plays well, you don't even need to use Beattie. Again, it's just a nice insurance policy.
Yeah, and I think you could plug Beattie in at guard if you have to, or if, you know, something happens to one of the tackles injuries. I guess, like you said, he's an insurance policy and a depth signing right now.
Absolutely. All right. Let's do Kyle Forsini. In my opinion, the Giants were able to run the ball to the left side successfully. Do you think with better defenses they can continue to do that? He also wants us to rank the Color Rush jerseys. My ranking is a 12 out of 10. They are Fuego. But let's talk about the left side of the line. It's no secret that the left side of the line is way better at run blocking than the right side of the line. We saw that last year. Flowers, as much as he struggles in pass protection, his number one strength is run blocking. You also have Pugh there. And you got, you know, Weston Richburg at center. And they also ran a lot to the left side last season. I don't remember the exact stat, but there was a game towards the end where, you know, they gave Rashad Jennings more than 10 carries finally, and almost all of them were to the left side of the line. So, Weiss, do you want to touch on this one first?
You know, they, like you say, they've always, that's their strength, is running to the left side. So they're going to continue running to the left. But there was an interesting formation that I saw. They had, on the right side of the line, they had Flowers, Newhouse, Jerry, and they ran in that direction. So I don't know if they're switching up a little bit, or if that, who knows what that was, but that was an interesting O-line scheme that I saw.
What point in the game was that at?
That was the fourth quarter.
Okay, so yeah, really trying to force the run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Loaded up on the right side.
Yeah. Also, what's your Color Rush jersey rating?
I don't even think that they're, I don't really call them Color Rush. They're throwback uniforms. So I love that they brought it back. I mean, they're all white. They're awesome.
Oh, come on. Give it a rating. You know you would.
Look, it's a 10 out of 10. It would have been much better than if it were like red.
100%. Like no red. Please keep the red off the jerseys.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I like it. I like the throwback. It's awesome. I like what Carl Banks said about that. You guys should watch that video of them introducing it. It's pretty cool with Carl Banks.
What did he say?
He just said it reminds him of memories of back in the day. He kind of told a little story, and then also it restores some pride. He liked it. He liked the helmet. Yeah. He liked the ball. It was a cool little moment.
Yeah, cool. All right, Dan, left side of the offensive line and your Color Rush ranking.
Yeah, well, I mean, like you guys said, I mean, that's where they're going to run the ball. I mean, that's where their best run blockers are. So I think the initial question was, will they be able to do it against good defenses? Well, I don't know. That's that's what the matchups are all about. I mean, you know, like, I don't think they're going to be, you know, the best run offense in the world. So some good defense will certainly be able to stop that, because it's not going to be a secret that they want to run it to that side. So, you know, I mean, they were solid on Sunday. I think that, and I'm not trying to drop too much cold water after I was just kind of pumping these guys up, but I don't think the run game was, like, tremendous on Sunday. You know what I mean?
It was effective enough.
That's the way I put it. I kind of gave the whole game, like, a B to a B+. It wasn't, like, this A+ dominant performance. Obviously, it's a win, and a division win on the road, so you can't discredit that. But, I mean, the four-minute offense that a lot of people are going crazy about, they picked up two first downs. I mean, they didn't run it down their throats and finish with a kneel down on the 3-yard line. I mean, they were in a dicey situation there because they couldn't pick up that one more first down that would ice the game. Again, it was good. It was better than maybe you expected or you've seen in the past. I mean, they made the Cowboys use all their timeouts. All that was good. I just don't think that suddenly this running game came to life. I mean, they picked up two first downs. I mean, congratulations. So anyway, after dumping all over that, the jerseys, I'll just give them a 10 because – A, I don't want to get you upset because you seem very passionate about them. And no, but B, I mean, I don't have.
Oh, come on, be honest.
No, I don't have the same feelings because obviously I didn't, you know, grow up a Giants fan. I don't have any nostalgia seeing these old uniforms. But I'm a classic guy, so I like that because some of these things they trot out for the color rush are just hideous. So
disgusting.
As long as you're not on that end of the spectrum, it's good. And yeah, it's a nice clean look. And like Wyatt said, it's really more just a throwback, which is always good. I think that's cool. And the fact that it does have that feeling for so many fans is great. But yeah, no, I just think when you go into something like this color rush where the NFL is getting creative, I think you're just hoping it's not going to be something just hideous. And this clearly isn't. So that's good enough for a 10 in my book.
Perfect. One thing I wanted to touch on with the running game, and you know, a lot of people, I don't want to say they give me shit for it, but listen, I am a believer in Rashad Jennings. I don't think he's some sort of, you know, amazing bell cow, especially considering his age and the fact that he hasn't had too incredible of an NFL career. But if you look back to last year, when he did get a majority of the carries, he was very effective. Over the last four games, I think he averaged around like 4.4 yards per carry or something great like that. Over this past Sunday against the Cowboys, you know, the run game wasn't anything to drool over, but it was effective. I think he had 18 carries and 75 yards, so he was a touch over 4 yards per carry, about like 4.1 or something like that. So I think as long as he stays healthy, the Giants will have an effective run game, so I'm optimistic about him. Let's do one more question. I saved it for last because it is sort of looking too far ahead in my opinion, but hey, it got asked. So Chris Whelan wants to know, and it also kind of related to last night's Monday Night Football game, and you guys probably know where this is going. Despite Giants fans' wishes to expose Josh Norman, do you think it's worth lining up Odell on Breland if Norman is going to stay on the left side of their defense? Dan.
That's an interesting question. I think that'll be, I don't know, if I'm Josh Norman and you have any say, you have to match up one-on-one with Odell. I don't care. I mean, whatever. They didn't do it last night, which I think is crazy. I mean, you pay this guy all this money and you're going to let Antonio Brown pick on their number two corner. That doesn't make any sense. But I mean, just like mano a mano, you can't talk as much as he's talked. You can't have what happened last year and then just go play on the other side. So I don't know what he has to do, if he has to go into Gruden's office and demand it the week of that game. But as far as from the Giants' perspective, I don't think you change either way. I mean, obviously you're going to try and find the best matchup. So yeah, if you know that Norman's going to stay on that side and you think he's their best corner, which I mean, as much as I'm kind of down on him, I'm sure he is. Then yeah, obviously try to put Beckham on the other side as much as you can, I guess. But I can't imagine that would be allowed to happen if you're Josh Norman. You have any pride? I mean, you have to match up with this guy the majority of the game. You have to. It would be such a lame end to this feud if he's just on the other side and Odell's catching bombs on the other side. It just can't happen. It would just be wrong for all the hype that we're gonna give this game.
God, I'm already drooling over that week 3 matchup. Oh my God! All right, Weiss, I'll let you comment on the Norman question.
I'm gonna get a little emotional here. Dan gave a very professional answer, but I'm gonna get a little. I'm gonna put my fan cap on here.
All right. Well, if you're gonna do that, then I'm certainly gonna do it when it's my turn. So I'll let you get started.
They paid this guy all this money, and he didn't cover Antonio Brown at all. I mean, Antonio Brown, really took Rashad Breland to school. And the fact that people are talking about how come the coaches didn't make a change, well, how come Norman didn't go to the sideline and say, hey, I'm guarding this guy? It was 24-16 at one point in that fourth quarter. And, the defense, the Redskins defense went out there, and Norman didn't say, I'm guarding Antonio Brown. And that's it just seems like, I'm not going to say he was scared, but it just seems like he was hesitant about that. And then at the end of the game, he was racing over there to get his jersey. So that's kind of a little cheap. And as far as the where the Giants line up their receivers, they just need to scheme for the Redskins, play their game. Josh Norman can't cover Odell Beckham, and they just need to scheme for that game and play their way.
Yeah, one-on-one. I've said it a million times. There is not a single cornerback in this league that can cover Odell. One-on-one, he is unguardable. You're going to need help over the top. And I pray that Josh Norman walks into Gruden's office and says, put me on Odell, because I want Odell to go off for 200 yards and 57 touchdowns, because Josh Norman is a punk. He is overpaid, and I want him exposed. If he wasn't exposed last night, he's going to get exposed next week And if not next week, he's going to get exposed in 2 weeks when the Giants take on the Redskins. He is a fraud. He is obsessed with Odell for some reason. He can't stop talking about him in interviews. And I am already drooling over that matchup. That's all I got to say about that. Not that that was too much or anything.
I mean, Dan, come on. I mean, the guy talked about him nonstop. And if he goes into that game and basically plays it the way he played Antonio Brown, I mean, come on. I mean, that would just be like, I can't imagine what the stuff people will say about Josh Norman if he plays the Giants the way he played the Steelers last night and not even attempt to cover Odell Beckham after all the stuff he said.
No, that's what I'm saying. I mean, if you got any pride, I mean, they don't have to be stupid about it. They don't have to put him one on one because, you know, as Ethan said, you know, he's not going to be able to cover him one on one, but. You just can't. You can't hide out on one side and let Odell pick on the number two guy. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe you're looking at it from a fan's perspective. I'm looking at it from a journalist. We want obviously the best storylines, but it just can't happen. The universe can't allow it to happen that they don't match up and square off, and we're all going to be charting every single snap that they're going against each other. It needs to happen.
And another thing. I'm going to say this professional thing is it's a competition, right? If you call yourself the best corner on the planet, that's what he said. He said, I feel like I'm the best cornerback on the planet. It is a 24-16 game. Your team just scored. It's a one-possession game. The crowd was into the game. And you go back out there, and you know what Antonio Brown has done so far, and you don't even make an effort to say, let me cover him. It just seems like he was like, I don't care. I'm not getting beat. And that didn't make any sense to me. I mean, it's not surprising because I don't think highly of Josh Norman in the first place, but
I hadn't picked up on that from you guys.
Yeah, it was 24-16 in the fourth quarter, and he didn't make an effort to say, "Hey, I'm guarding this guy." The fans were in the game, the towels were being waved, and it was just, where's the competitive side in you? You were quick to run at him at the end of the game and get his jersey and sign his thing and be all lovey-dovey. I mean, where's the competitive spirit during the game? I mean, I don't know. That's just me, but. If my team paid a corner $75 million, I understand all the play side and all that, but in that moment, you have to cover the other team's best receiver, at least a play or two. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean, listen, as much as I want Odell Norman, if they're not going to have Norman shadow him, I'll let Odell expose Breland all day, every day. So it's going to be interesting to see how they handle that. I think that's it. Those are the questions. We'll end the show here, running on 45-ish minutes. Dan, thank you so much for coming on.
Dan, thank you, man. It was awesome.
This was awesome. Hopefully, we can get you on again. Let me plug your Twitter, at dduggan21. You can read him on nj.com/giants. Go follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Go follow me at EthanGSN. And as always, subscribe to the podcast. Please leave a rating and review. It helps us grow, helps us climb the rankings. And that's it. Great week one, 1-0. And we will speak to you guys next week.
1-0 since first time since they're 1-0 since 2010 when they opened MetLife Stadium.
Amazing.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for having me on, guys. It was fun. I hope I'll be your best guest until you land Eric Flowers somewhere down the road.
Oh, boy. I think that might be like nationally televised if we can get him on the podcast.
I'll put a word in for you.
Thanks.